Today on Family Talk.
For decades, many Americans have been vaguely aware of the threats of Islamic terrorism. But these barbarians always seem to be so far away, roaming the mountains of Afghanistan or Pakistan. However, over the past few years, these barbarians have drawn closer, as evidenced by terror attacks at the Boston Marathon, the Inland Regional Center in San Bernardino, California, and of course, at the World Trade Center Twin Towers on 9/11. It might seem as though that now that the barbarians are here, we Americans are powerless to stop them. Or are we? Welcome to Family Talk with your host, psychologist and best-selling author Dr. James Dobson. On today's program, we're continuing a conversation Dr. Dobson had recently with Dr. Michael Youssef. Dr. Youssef is senior pastor of the Church of the Apostles in Atlanta, Georgia. He's also the featured teacher for Leading the Way, the television and radio ministry, currently broadcast in 25 languages worldwide. He's also the author of more than 30 books, including God Help Me Rebuild My Broken World and Fortify Your Faith in Difficult Times. Dr. Youssef's most recent book is called The Barbarians Are Here, Preventing the Collapse of Western Civilization in Times of Terrorism. And that is the subject of today's conversation here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
As like somebody told me from the White House back in the early days of the 80s, quoting now, I'm not putting anybody down, but I'm quoting this person, an official. Do you think these goat herders are going to come and destroy us? We are the most powerful nation in the world. And the thing is, this was the very beginning, and I wish they listened to me back then.
You were saying it.
Two things. In 1982, I had meetings with some government officials, and I shared with them the danger and you know how they wait, and they patiently, and they wait, and they strategize, and they plan, and at the right time, they'll do things. I'll give you an example of what they're doing in England. 25 years ago, I read the document. And they said,
what document?
The document that the Islamist people have produced of how they're going to take over
it's
England.
Their plan.
Their plan. I mean, okay. It was not a secret. So I got a copy of it. And they said, we're going to start from the top Scotland to the bottom of the British Isles. And what we're going to do, we're going to have centers from the north to the south. And they have. And they have these areas what they call no-go zone, where the police cannot go there. The government cannot go there. Nobody can go there. This is an Islamist area. Nobody's allowed to come in. So they can practice their Sharia courts, and they can do all that they need to do in terms of honor killing and all this. Nobody can touch them. So they said, once we have those established and become strong, that is the backbone. Then we're going to build the ribs, and that is we're going to go east and west. This is 25 years ago. And you look here 25 years later. It's exactly what's happening. You look where the mosques are. And while in the next 5 years, and it's documented, 500 churches are going to close in England, 475 mosques are being built. And so once they get the ribs, those are the ones going to go from the spine around east-west of England, then it will be easier for us to be able to control the local governments and the members of parliament. They have several now Muslims in British Parliament. This is how they said we're going to take over England 25 years ago, and they're doing it. See, when you see them making a plan or saying something and we dismiss them and call them the JVs, it is to our own detriment.
So what we're seeing now with these bombings every few days, killings on the street, gay bars in Orlando where they, I don't know how many were murdered that night.
Yeah.
But those things are going to not only continue, but they're going to increase in intensity. So they're not just going after the UK and Europe, but they are also simultaneously trying to undermine us. Tell us what Sharia law is. I think I have an idea of it, but I need to know more.
Sharia itself means law. For example, when the Christian pastor is preaching about the law of Moses, he called it the Sharia of Moses because that's just a word. That's what it means. And there is a division within the Muslims right now. But the Islamists, and I always make that distinction between the Islamists and the rest of the Muslims, they want to talk the literal interpretation and the literal teaching of the Quran, which was relevant to a 7th century Arabia and apply it today. For example, in the Sharia law, a woman is half of a man. And therefore, if there is two witnesses in the court, two male witnesses required for some case in the courts, you have to have four women. A woman inherits half of what her brother inherits from the father. There's just a law of the land in all of the Muslim countries still, even without those who applied the Sharia. And then it goes on and on. A woman is not complete as a person. She has to have a guardian, either her father or her husband. So she cannot be independent. And then you go into the chopping of the left hand from the wrist for the first offense of stealing. The second offense, they chop the right hand. And then if you really become a person of blasphemy, they will chop your feet. And that goes on and on and on in minutest details. If you are caught in adultery, you're beheaded and killed. And the list is just horrific to even get into the details of it. But
that's not just
simple.
The Middle East, but they really want to implement that in the UK and here.
Well, through the power of the investments of Muslim Arabs in the UK, they got the previous government of Mr. Brown to agree to allow them to have Sharia courts. And they said, this is just for us. You know, you don't have to. So they had two or three. But as you know, you open the door and there is no end to it. They have 82 Sharia courts in England now. Mm. And so if a man beats his wife or his daughter black and blue, and if she dares to go to the police and goes to court, the man says, no, you have no authority over me. You need to send me to a Sharia court. And the judge, of course, terrified, immediately signs and says, okay, to the Sharia court you go. And he goes to the Sharia court. And the lawyer opens the Quran. There's a chapter there called An-Nisa, which means women, in one of the books of the Quran. And he said, here it says here that you can beat your wife as long as you don't beat her in the face. And you do this and you do the details. And so the judge at the Sharia court signed, said, okay, just go and don't beat her too hard. Go home.
Is there any place in the United States where that is law?
Actually, I have a case in one of my books about a case in New Jersey where an Algerian man refused the judge's verdict. And he said, you have no authority over me. I'm a Muslim. You need to send me a Sharia court. So he sent him to a mosque. Mm. And it's happening all across. Mm. Some states actually now, I think Kentucky, my memory doesn't serve me, which states, but they really have a referendum or a voting, say, we do not want Sharia courts in our state. Kentucky or Oklahoma, one of the two.
We're told that the Quran is a book of peace. Mm. Is that true?
Well, I just wish people read it. I actually challenge people to read the Quran because until they read it for themselves, I am seeing liberals in the media now who have gone and read the Quran. They're terrified, and I won't mention names, but they're coming out saying, man, this is dreadful. Because they bought into this thing, so they went and read it. I want everybody to read it. It will make your blood curdle, some parts of it. But the thing is, it is there in black and white. There is no but or if. Again, in the Sharia court, the Sharia law says that an infidel who refused to convert to Islam should be beheaded. But if he happened to be a Christian or a Jew, whom they called the people of the book, they give them a reprieve, that you got a second chance, but you have to pay what they call jizya. Now, the word jizya in Arabic means punishment. It's a form of taxation to punish you and to declare you as a second-class citizen, and you'll become the protected or a dhimmi of the state. And so my ancestors, who been Christians since the first century, when Islam invaded Egypt in the middle of the 600s, they were given a choice, being Christians, that if you want to survive, you don't want to be beheaded, you pay jizya. So my ancestors have been paying jizyas, taxes, high form of taxation, just to survive until the Turkish Ottoman occupation came. And then when the British came and became a British, Egypt became a British colony, that stopped. But it was like for hundreds of years. And that's what they want to do now. As a matter of fact, when the Muslim Brotherhood took over power in Egypt, only for 12 months, thank God, I have seen them, their leaders on television saying, yes, America gives us $2 billion in aid every year. But that's a jizya because they are infidels. If they don't want us to start really terrorizing them, you better keep paying this $2 billion in aid. Thankfully, the Church of Jesus Christ throughout Egypt of all denominations start praying because the Muslim Brotherhood government brought the country to its knees economically and in every way. And so the Christians said, we have no recourse if we don't want to become refugees like Assyria and Iraq. There were prayer meetings 24/7 going on in throughout the country. People crying out to God. And God heard their cry. And on June 30th, 2013, 33 million people took to the streets of all the provinces from north to south demanding the removal of the Muslim Brotherhood president. And General Sisi was the head of the army. At that point, he was compelled to try to bring peace to the country and forced the man. He said, you either respond to them or just go to house arrest. He said, no, as long as I have Obama supporting me, I'm not going to do what they want me to do. And in the end, he put him under house arrest and gave the folks a choice. However, they drafted him to become president. He did not want to be president, but he turned out to be a fine man, and he really loves the Christians.
Dr. Yusuf, this is what is strange to me. The far left in this country.
Yes.
thinking of the ACLU and the radical feminists and a lot of the educators on state-run universities and all of those is somehow supportive of the Muslim, radical Muslim movement.
Right.
Yet within it, are hostilities to gays and to women.
Yep.
I mean, you can't criticize a woman in this country without paying a price for it if she doesn't think it's fair.
Yes.
The law favors her in many ways and should. I think though that's the way a Christian man sees
respect,
a woman and so
respect
on.
Them.
How do we explain the far left being so sympathetic with the opposite of what they claim they care about?
Exactly. Well, from a secular point of view, it's pure ignorance of the fact or pretending that it, our previous president,
they're
the previous
afraid.
Broadcast, if I'm nice to them, they'll be nice to us. Some are afraid. So they will say, yeah, we'll go along. They did a number also by going, I'm talking about the extremists in America, they went to these groups and they said, we are a persecuted minority like you. We'll support you, you support us. And they said, okay. They have no idea what they're doing. But from a spiritual point of view, and you have to have spiritual eyes to see this. You cannot see it without spiritual eyes. That God is blinding them. That this is a blinder they have. They don't know that the Christians who love them, they would never agree about their lifestyle. They might not agree with anything else they're doing. But they love them as people and welcome them in their churches. They become the enemies. But these very people who take them up on rooftops and throw them down, as it happens in Iran and many other countries, they throw the gays from rooftops. They become their allies. They say, we're both minorities and we're both persecuted. And even the Muslim CARE organization, CARE is the name of the acronym of the Muslim Brotherhood in the United States. They adopted some of the lobbying language of the homosexual groups. And so they adopting that language because in Islam there is something called taqiyya. That is, you agree with your enemy if you're not in a position of power. Until you get the position of power, then you turn on him. It's called taqiyya. It's part of the law, of the Islamic law. And so they can deceive you, they can lie to you and cheat and so forth. As long as you're infidel, it's okay. It's a virtue. And so I was watching one day, the day after Mr. Trump's inauguration, there was a feminist protest in Washington, D.C. Some 40,000 women, 50,000, whatever, all these feminists who are protesting our president. But the one who was leading the protest on the platform is a Muslim lady by the name of Linda Sarsour. She was wearing the hijab as she was, you know, attacking these bigots and the Christians. And then she began to say, what we need in America is the Sharia. And then all the women said, yeah. I said, I want to tear my hair. I said, do you know if Sharia ever comes to America, you're going to be the first victims, the gays and the feminists. I mean, it's just simple mathematics. Yeah. You go and read it. But unfortunately, ignorance is not a bliss.
As the Islamic objective is carried out, that you write about in this book, the barbarians are coming for this purpose. It's the Christians that are targeted first.
Exactly.
We're the ones we're that the are going to be castigated and deprived of our rights.
Exactly.
And
they believe once they succeed in doing this, they believe the others will be taken down very quickly.
And that's why you're saying there's no time to lose.
There's no time to lose. I'm passionate. If I would go to every church and to every Christian home and I would plead with them, wake up before it is too late.
Michael, are you hopeful? Do we panic?
Oh, I never panic. I never panic because I read the last chapter.
But we've got to have the motivation to do the hard thing.
Absolutely. That is that.
What is the hard thing? What can we do? I mean, our government seems sympathetic.
Yes.
You know, we're still importing or allowing a lot of people to come in.
I was on the border between Jordan and Syria, where all the refugees are. I went to the border between Lebanon and Syria, where all the refugees. My heart tears for them. And that's why we're trying to bring the love of Christ to them and help them in every way we can. But by the same token, the United Nations officials, they're the ones who do the vetting, not Americans, but the United Nations. And they deliberately would not help the Christians to leave the country, but they will help Muslims. And they said, oh, yeah, he's a true refugee because Assad of Syria is persecuting them. And they're sort of really discriminating against Christians. And the previous administration knew about this and said and done nothing.
We talked earlier about the 21 Coptic Christians who were beheaded.
Yes.
Our president would not call that Muslim extremism.
No. No.
They call them Egyptian citizens.
That's right.
Not Christians.
That's right.
And here's and that's a fact.
Absolutely. But here's the thing that should shame some of our government officials. President Sisi, a Muslim, he's the president of Egypt. When he saw that happened and he had no control over Libya, he said he will not go to the patriarch to pay his condolences for the death of these whom he called martyrs before he revenged them. And so he sent planes and literally destroyed the entire camp of ISIS in Libya the next day.
We didn't hear about that.
Oh, and that's right. The media would never tell us about that. And then he went to pay his condolences. He said, I know you Christians don't like revenge. And I understand you don't like vengeance. But I do. And I did not want to come here and pay my condolences without avenging their blood. And the Egyptian Air Force went there and did havoc for ISIS until now, recently, just beginning to kind of come back again. So this is what I don't understand. I just came back from Egypt where I met with the highest government officials, highest level. And they would say to me, we are Muslims. We are the one who are talking to you are Muslims. And we are declaring the Muslim Brotherhood a terrorist organization. How come your President Obama would not do the same, refuse to do it? And to be quite honest, it's still not being done now under President Trump. Still not want to call the Muslim Brotherhood because they know they are very big and behind the scene working right here in this country. And because the Saudis are not really supportive of that. But the Egyptian officials who are Muslims saying, you people need to wake up before it's too late.
What does that mean, Michael? We're running out of time here.
Sure.
You've got strongly evangelical churches that are really trying to serve the Lord, trying to win people to Christ and so on.
Yep.
What does this book say they're supposed to do?
Okay. If we're talking about American churches.
Yes.
American churches has for the last 30 years been edging away from the gospel and into entertainment. Not all of them, of course, thank God. But more and more of the mega churches going into being accepted by the culture, accepted by society, far more than want to be accepted by Jesus. And that's the danger. And I plead with everyone who goes to one of these churches to begin a prayer meeting and get on their knees, cry to God that the church leaders begin to preach the gospel with its purity and with all of its offenses. We know that there is an offense of the gospel. But don't be afraid, because Jesus, that's his gospel, and he'll take care of us. And so that's my first plea. Turn back to the gospel. Turn back to biblical orthodoxy. Turn back to biblical truth. Stop wanting to be liked by society. Stop wanting to be liked by the culture at large. And I think when we start doing that in evangelical churches, where it starts, we're going to see God begin to do some great work. And that's the hopeful part of the book.
That's powerful, because the gospel is powerful.
Yeah.
And so you're not suggesting we declare war on these people as such.
No.
You're saying
the opposite.
Take the language and take the truths of the scripture and let that win people and win hearts to Christ.
Paul said it is the power of God unto salvation.
Yeah.
It's the power of God. And when we take it seriously and we go out and really proclaim it and then believe it and live it, I really believe that is where the hope is.
That'll preach, brother.
Amen.
And that's what you're doing. Yeah, you're not only a pastor, you have a television program, you have a radio program, you've written 30 books, more than 30. Mm. I called you the Energizer Bunny. You are everywhere, off to the Middle East and back. God be with you.
Thank you.
Dr. Youssef.
Thank you so much, Dr.
Thank you for being my friend.
Well, you've been a hero and a role model for me. So, and I said that to you in the last 30 years. So you continue to be a role model and a hero. And I pray for you. And surely God will continue to bless you richly.
Speaking of prayer, how can they pray for you?
Well, pray that I stay at the very center of the will of God, that I continue to be faithful to him, because that is the only longing I have in my heart. You and I were talking about this, and we've been talking about this for years, that I live for the audience of one when I hear "well done." That's all I want to accomplish. Yes.
Yeah. Won't that be an incredible moment?
It's going to be a great day.
If the Lord would just lay his hand on my shoulder and say,
"Well done.
You did all right."
He will.
You weren't perfect.
He will.
You made a lot of stupid mistakes.
That's right.
The Lord doesn't use the word stupid, but I know what he would mean.
Yes.
And that.
But this is all covered under the blood, because he will only see you through the prism of Jesus, and he'll see you perfect.
Praise the
Lord. Amen.
Thanks for coming to see us.
Pleasure.
In Colorado
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much.
Dr. Michael Youssef has been Dr. Dobson's guest here on Family Talk. They have been discussing the church's role in stopping the spread of radical Islamic terrorism here in the U.S. This is a theme Dr. Youssef unpacks further in his most recent book. It's called "The Barbarians Are Here: Preventing the Collapse of Western Civilization in Times of Terrorism." You'll find a link for this book on our broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org. And while you're there, you can access the link to the audio file for this program as well, so you can share it with a friend who needs to hear this vital message, and it's a valuable one at that. Especially, your pastor needs to hear this. So be sure to access the links for both the book as well as the audio file when you click onto the broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org. Then, join in the discussion about this topic that's going on right now on our Facebook page. Click onto facebook.com/drjamesdobson. And remember, Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk is a completely listener-supported ministry. We rely on God through your tax-deductible financial contributions to help us continue in the work to which He has called us. Your gift today will help us weather the summer months when contributions sometimes fall off a bit. So thanks for calling toll-free with your gift at 877-732-6825. That's 877-732-6825. Or you can give a gift online through our secure website at drjamesdobson.org. I'm Roger Marsh. Be sure to join us again next time right here for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.
Hi, everyone. Dr. Tim Clinton here. When you think about your family and where they'll be when you're no longer living, are you worried? Are you confident? You hopeful? What kind of a legacy are you leaving for your children and their children right now? Here at Family Talk, we're committed to helping you understand the legacy that you're leaving your family. Join us today at drjamesdobson.org. You're going to find helpful insights, tips, and advice from Dr. Dobson himself. And remember, your legacy matters.